From the studios of Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Howard Soons is my guest, and he's written about Bob Dylan, Charles Bukowski, and now Paul McCartney. Howard Soons' latest book is Fab, An Intimate Life of Paul McCartney. Howard Soons, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Hi.
You know, the Beatles are easily the most written about band in the history of popular music, and there have been other books devoted to Paul McCartney, but your book is by far the most up-to-date. But were you at all tempted to just start the book in 1970 and not take the first half of Fab to retell the Beatles' story?
Well, no, I knew I had to tell the Beatles' story. I think what I've done that is slightly different is that I've written a life of Paul that's half and half, that's chronologically correct, in fact. So the first half of the book takes you up to the breakup of the Beatles when he's around about 30, and then we have the rest of his life in the second half of the book. And most books about Paul tend to concentrate, for obvious reasons, on the Beatles, which is such a great story, and then they get to sort of chapter 20, and yeah. They've got only got 100 pages left, and they have to rush through Wings and everything he's done since. So I wanted more space, really, to have a better structure in which to tell the story in what I thought was a better way.
Well, do you think you have something to add to the story of the Beatles that hadn't been told before?
Well, that's for others to say, really. I did my best. I do original research. I speak to people. I go out and find people and speak to people again. It's such a well-known story. It's like telling the story of the Second World War. You know, everybody knows what's going to happen, and the high points are, of course, well worn. But at the same time, it's such a great story. It's so dramatic, and there's so many good characters in it that it's intrinsically entertaining and interesting.
I guess one of the frustrating things about the Paul McCartney story is that, ever since Philip Norman's book, Shout, which is a very good book in other respects, it's been the fashion to sort of lionize John and demonize Paul.
Yes. Of course, John has been given a better press, partly because he's dead, and so he has our sympathy, and he's become this sort of tragic figure, whereas Paul has the harder job of living on and continuing and living a life. And I think also perhaps he's a slightly less sympathetic character. He's rather more businesslike. He's brisker. And he has, at the same time, he has a sentimental side, which some people don't like. They find him rather soppy in his work. And there are aspects of his character which aren't particularly attractive. He can be rather brisk with people. But for all that, he's a great man. He's achieved a great deal, and I think he's carried himself remarkably well. He's worn his fame rather lightly, considering how enormously successful he's been. And when you add these things up, he's probably the foremost rock star in the world because of the Beatles and because he's still around. That's he could have been very easily spoilt by so much success. I don't think he has particularly.
Well, I don't know if you follow baseball over there. You know, we have a sport here called baseball. And
yeah.
We got a team called the
New York. You always win the World Series, I always do.
That's right, because nobody else is allowed to play. But, Canada participates. But the New York Yankees are a team that everybody has an opinion. They either love them or they hate them. Nobody ever says, God, I hate the Detroit Tigers. But everybody says, I hate the Yankees. And in some way, that seems to be true with Paul McCartney. Why does he engender such feeling both on both sides?
I don't know, really. In the UK, he's never been very fashionable. He's more popular in America than he is in the UK, strangely, because I think there's a school of thought amongst the sort of the intelligentsia or the people who consider themselves to be intelligentsia that he's rather his work is soft and intellectually vapid and not very taxing or demanding, whereas John was more of an intellectual. So there's that school of thought. So a lot of people don't like him for that reason. And a lot of people find him to be a little bit too Mr. Show Business, you know, the big smile, the thumbs up. He's always ready for to give a quote or to pose for a photograph, which somehow makes him seem a bit cheap. But, of course, you could look at it the other way. You could say, well, he's playing the game with a great deal of maturity. And, of course, as I say, you know, John has this advantage by dying as he did. If John had had to carry on and live a life, who knows what terrible records he would have made, and, you know, he might have been on Dancing with the Stars or some terrible, you know, he could have made all sorts of terrible mistakes that would have cheapened his reputation. But as it is, you know, he's been gone now for many, many years, and he was, and he's become this tragic figure.
Well, you said in your book that you were setting out to write, and now let me quote you, you said, with this book, I set out to write a better balanced, more detailed and more comprehensive life of Paul McCartney than had previously been achieved. And I think that you started out doing that, but I think there are some areas where you seem a little unfair to Paul McCartney, and I hope you don't mind if I ask you about them.
Sure.
Like, for when you're talking about his album with the single Hope of Deliverance, you mentioned a number called Big Boys Bickering, and you said, admonished the world leaders for fucking up the planet and became notable because the BBC and other broadcasters refused to play it on the air because of banned language. And then you say, there was a sense that Paul was courting publicity in an increasingly desperate attempt to sell records and the numbers he once had. And I just wonder about that particular sentence, there was a sense. I mean, when you say there was a sense, who has this
well,
sense?
Well, that's me. I have this sense. Uh-huh. And I think I was also reflecting what had been written in reviews of that record in the music press. And there were other things that behind that, I can't remember exactly the context, but there were other things he'd said and done which appeared that way.
You know, I mean, but that's one way of looking at it, but can't you also say, you know, he had legitimate political feelings and therefore he wrote a political song?
Well, I guess I didn't feel that way. I mean, as the author, you come to a conclusion about people or about things people do when you write about them, and you have to express how you feel. You know, sometimes you think the guy is doing the right thing, or he's done a good thing, or he's created something that's really worthwhile, and sometimes it just seems to fall flat, or it seems like a flat note to you. And I think in that instance, it felt to me like a sort of flat note.
We're talking with Howard Soons, and his most recent book is a biography of Paul McCartney called Fab, and it is a fabulous book, and I recommend it to all of you. But nevertheless, I'm still going to ask you about some of these things. There's another quote that you had when you used this word sense. You said, sort of toward the end of the book, and you say, with John and George gone, and Richie always of lesser importance, it had fallen to Paul to carry the Beatles' torch. Along with the sadness, there was a sense that he felt liberated by the fact that John and George weren't around to snipe at him anymore. Again, you know, is there any evidence that Paul has ever said that he was glad that his friends weren't around, or that he considered Ringo a lesser part of the group?
Well, no, again, I'm saying that, and this is my sense. That's me just expressing really my conclusions, especially at the end of the book. Certainly, it seems to me obvious that Richie was always, you know, basically just a drummer. So I know some people are offended by that, but I mean, you know, that's the truth of the matter. He's certainly the junior partner in the band, and certainly I think there has been. As you read the book, you'll see that the evidence mounts that there were decades of rather difficult relations with Paul with his fellow Beatles. And George was exasperating at times, right up to the end. And John was certainly exasperating. And he fell out with Ringo as well. And so, although Ringo's still around, at the end of the day, he's basically got the stage to himself. You know, when you see Paul McCartney perform, he is what's left of the Beatles, really. He plays the Beatles songs, it sounds like the Beatles, and you go to see him, really, to experience what some kind of simulation of what the Beatles was. And my sense is, as someone who spent some time studying this, was that he did he gave the my sense was that he felt liberated by that, and he could be himself at the end of the day.
Well, let me just ask you about that thing that you just said right now, that, that most people go to hear Paul because they want to hear the Beatles. And you say that, actually, you talk about that in your book also. You said, and this is the first time I think that you use the word I in the book. You said, to interject a brief personal note, the first Paul McCartney show I ever saw was on the tour in January 1990. Paul McCartney's solo career had made little impression on me so far, and what I'd heard on the radio of his work with Wings and afterwards seemed lightweight, and I didn't own any of his records. The Beatles were another matter. Although they were stars before I was born, the energy and creative brilliance of the band had captured my imagination, as with millions of others. The Beatles crossed generations. I therefore attended my first McCartney show with mixed feelings, as I'm sure many others did during that tour. One was coming primarily because of the Beatles rather than the music Paul had made since 1970, and hoping not to hear too much of the latter. And again, I can understand you are feeling this way, but would you say that it, I mean, I understand that the Beatles are the biggest rock band ever, but would you say that people going to hear, say, Steve Winwood would be hoping he'd only play Traffic and not play, you know, Ark of a Diver, or people going to hear Paul Simon would say, I hope he only plays Mrs. Robinson and not, you know, Graceland?
Well, to a lesser extent, I think it's more so with Paul McCartney. I mean, that piece you just read is quite right. But I do then say, but it was a great show, uh-huh. And I loved it. And then I told everyone it was a great show, and you should go and see him.
Yeah.
But I think with McCartney, and McCartney says this himself. You know, he says, if I went to see Stevie Wonder, I want him to play, you know, his hits. I don't want to hear the esoteric stuff. I want to hear his hits. And I think with Paul that there is a strong expectation that you will get the hits, and by that I mean the Beatles stuff and a bit of Wings, and hopefully not too much from the last album, because that doesn't really command the attention of the general public, and it doesn't command my attention. I mean, having said that, there are good things on some of his albums. I mean, and some of the albums are very underrated, I think. Some of the Fireman stuff, some of the solo albums are great, but in the great scheme of things, they can't stack up against Abbey Road, and they never will.
Oh, of course. I mean, you know, who could ever make a record that, you know, nobody could make a record that would stack up against those.
No.
Those.
No, but I mean, what I mean is the thrill of going to see Paul and having him perform as he did that show I saw back in 1990. He did the Abbey Road medley at the end of the show.
Right.
It was an absolutely electrifying moment. It was really thrilling for me, and I'm sure the rest of the audience. Whereas that same night, I remember he did sort of that song Figure of Eight from that album Flowers in the Dirt.
Right.
And really, you're looking at your watch. You know, you wanted him to get through that and get back to the stuff you came for. And you know, to this day, I can't bring myself to play Flowers in the Dirt. I just don't find it at all engaging. But, you know, one loves Abbey Road, and it's a great classic.
Oh, I guess now we're just talking about taste, because, you know, I personally think that Flowers in the Dirt is one of his better records because of the collaboration with Elvis Costello. I think My Brave
yeah.
Face and You Want Her Too, those are some pretty good songs.
Distractions. It doesn't really ring my bell, as it were. It's not I think it's not an album I enjoy. I find it a bit bland and a bit just kind of formulaic rock. I think there are some, you know, there are good albums. There are good later albums, but Flaming Pie, Pie was good, etc.
Yeah. I want to talk about some of those records that are great. But then I guess I want to ask this question. Now, I don't think everybody who writes a biography of somebody should absolutely love that person. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of biographers of Hitler who don't love Hitler. But why write a biography of Paul McCartney if you're not a fan?
Well, you know, I don't think you can be a fan. I mean, I'm a professional writer, and I write books, and I write books about all sorts of people. And you don't necessarily have to like the people you write about. And in fact, you probably shouldn't like them. You shouldn't hate them, because you know you're going to color what you write in the other way. It's best to be kind of aloof, essentially, to kind of hover above the subject, and to try and be objective. Because you know, I'm not a fan. I'm not part of that world. I'm a guy writing a book in a serious, professional way, which will command a large readership. And although my tastes do come into it, I don't start out from the point of view of being a fan or of being anti-Paul. The idea is to, as I say, to sort of try and steer a middle course, and that's important if you're going to retain any kind of judgment.
Well, we're talking with Howard Soons, and he's the author of Fab, An Intimate Life of Paul McCartney, and he's also the author of books about Bob Dylan and Charles Bukowski and other things. Let's talk about, one of the wonderful things about your book is that it's very up-to-date, and it takes us through the whole Heather Mills saga. But update us further. What's going on with Paul now? What's he up to?
Well, I guess, to be honest, when you finish a book, you kind of, the subject is forgotten, and I move on to other things. But, I mean, one hears that he's going to marry Nancy Chevelle, this American girlfriend of his, whom he's been with since the past few years now. And I'm sure he will. And he's obviously a guy who likes being married. I mean, he speaks about that a lot, and there's plenty of that in the book, where he obviously loved being married to Linda. He loved the stability of family life after being, the craziness of rock and roll. And, of course, his own childhood family was broken up when his mother died. So he's been trying to recreate that. He did very successfully with Linda, and less successfully with Heather, that was a disaster, really. And I'm sure he's going to try again with Nancy at what is essentially the end of his life now. I mean, I can't imagine that he'll get married again, although I have children. But it's a nice companionable relationship to retire into, I suppose.
It must come as a surprise to even Paul McCartney that he's still such a vibrant performer at his age.
Yes, it's a great show. I mean, he is a good performer. I mean, the voice is a bit croaky at times, but as his show warms up, he's got a great band, brilliant band who cover for him, and the thing, the whole performance is really first class. It's a great rock show, brilliantly entertaining, a bit formulaic. It's not like Bob Dylan, where he's different every night. Paul McCartney's show is the same every night, right down to the comments in between the songs. But it's a fantastic rock show.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up Bob. I mean, those guys do two completely different kinds of shows. I mean, Dylan plays much smaller halls, and he's also had the same band now for about 20 years. But he does change things around every night. But he doesn't have the voice that he once had. Although, you're right, Paul's voice isn't as great as it once was. It's still a pretty impressive instrument.
Yeah.
Whereas, have you heard Bob Dylan lately live?
Yeah. Well, I'm personally, Bob Dylan's more to my taste. So I'm prejudiced toward Bob Dylan. And I love that, everything about him, really. And I rather love the way that he keeps going, no matter. There's something marvelous and almost brave about that, and it's part of who he is. But Paul McCartney is a different sort of... Paul McCartney, to my mind, is more in the mainstream of show business, and so it's a much slicker show, which is a little less interesting, I think. But nevertheless, certainly very, very effective on the night. If you just go once, it's great. But if you went three times, you'd see the same show three times, like going to see The Lion King on Broadway. And that I find a little bit dispiriting.
Yeah. No, but, well, of course, Dylan doesn't say anything, so therefore he can't say the same thing twice.
People say that, but I've heard Bob Dylan tell jokes on stage, really just gags. People laugh,
Really?
He does speak. I mean, he's unpredictable, uh-huh. And that's part of his charm, isn't it? Whereas Paul is very predictable, and that's charming too. He's predictable in that very polite English way where he always tries to be nice and say the right thing and shake your hand and look you in the eye, and by and large he does that. But it's a little, at times it seems a little bit glib. I think that's part of why people don't always warm to him so much.
Let's talk a little bit about Paul McCartney, the musician. I think everybody would agree that he's one of the great bass players in the history of rock and roll. But he's also, he's pretty avant-garde, interesting. And even some of his most mainstream music, like, say, Silly Love Songs. If you take the vocal off of Silly Love Songs and just listen to the arrangement of that song, it's kind of a weird, building up a little symphony of strange sounds.
Yes, I mean, I think as a musician, he's something of a genius, isn't he? He's something of a natural genius, probably more so than John Lennon was. And I think when he allows himself to be experimental, he's most interesting on things like, I mean, there's a Fireman album called Rushes, which he made when Linda was dying or just after she died, which I think is terrific, and it's really quite avant-garde. And I think that's when he's at his best, really. But then there's this other side to him where he has to be an entertainer and a mainstream. And of course, I don't think, the vocals, he's a great musician, always a great musician, can always come up with a great and a great writer of melodies. But the lyrics sometimes seem a bit vapid. I mean, sometimes they're great. There's great Paul McCartney lyrics like Eleanor Rigby and so forth. But there's plenty of poor lyrics as well. And I think that somewhat sometimes distracts from the music.
On his most recent Paul McCartney album, the one that's called Memory Almost Full.
That was good.
Yeah.
Was a good album, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was very good. And he has a song, I think, the song about My Ever-Present Past. That's a song only he could write, and what an interesting lyric that one has.
A great lyric. And in fact, the lyrics on the last album I thought were unusually strong. The End of the End is great. That Was Me is good. And they're very reflective. Almost Dylan-esque, in that as Dylan is now becoming this grand old man of rock and roll and very reflective and looking back over his life. And I find that very interesting. But he hasn't done that, really, by and large, throughout his career. That's a bit of a departure. And the songs are quite autobiographical, and I like that.
Yeah, I think actually if you judge from the last bunch of records, from Flaming Pie, which was really pretty good, and Chaos and Creation, that's also pretty good.
Yeah, I think somebody more eminent than me said recently, good artists tend to get more interesting as they get older. Leonard Cohen is a good example, and Dylan is a good example. And I think that's probably true, that they're getting to the stage in life where they haven't really got to worry about making money anymore, and they can be more reflective and take their time. And, of course, the irony is that these albums don't sell, So an album like Memory Almost Full, although he absolutely plugged it, I don't think it sold at all well. And there hasn't been one since because, that time has gone, really, where people rush out and buy the new Paul McCartney album. But years ago, when people did rush out and buy the new Paul McCartney album, they were often of a much lower quality than they are today.
Yeah, well, I also think that it's kind of a hit and miss kind of thing. Not that the records, I love Band on the Run, and I think it's a great record. But, I think there are songs on records surrounding Band on the Run that are better than some of the Band on the Run songs. I mean, I think there's always something to find.
Yeah, there's always something, yeah, there's always something, that's true.
And I guess if you look at a guy who had been collaborating with, four really impressive musicians, including George Martin, obviously there's competition when you're working with John Lennon and George and Ringo to come up with the best, I did have Robert Hilburn on here once, and he said that he thought that Plastic Ono Band was better than any Beatles album, and I dispute that.
Oh, really? Well, that's a remarkable thing to say.
It is. Do you think that that's true?
No, that's a mad thing to say. I'm surprised he would say it because he's a very eminent writer on these subjects.
People
have all sorts of bizarre opinions. You meet great Shakespearean actors who tell you that Shakespeare didn't write the plays. I mean, there's all sorts of crazy people around.
That's right. I guess he's one of them. But you're right that people don't rush out and buy the new Paul McCartney album, but I guess they don't rush out and buy any album now.
Well, yeah, that's true, isn't it? Although I always compared McCartney with Dylan, and I think with Dylan people do still go out and buy the album because Dylan is seen to be still at the top of his game and has been for a while now, since Time Out of Mind.
Yeah.
Whereas I think people don't take McCartney as seriously and they don't really care what the next McCartney album is about. And I think that's generally true. Of course, there are McCartney fans, and one has met them and interviewed them, and some of them are in the book, who live for Paul McCartney, and certainly they buy everything, and they go and see every show. And there's probably many more of them than there are Dylan fans. But there's an intensity of interest in Bob Dylan and what Bob Dylan's saying and doing and thinking that there isn't really with Paul McCartney, because, as I say, I think Paul McCartney is just much more in the mainstream of show business, whereas Dylan is seen to be more of a kind of intellectual, as a thinker, as a sort of guru figure, like Leonard Cohen is.
Mm-hmm. They're very interesting. It's interesting to talk about both Dylan and McCartney, because there came a point in popular music, and that point was when Bob Dylan and the Beatles arrived, you know, so simultaneously, in which music changed, fundamentally changed, in a way that it's never changed since. I mean, the proof of that is you can play a Beatles record or a Bob Dylan record alongside music that's being played, contemporary music, and it sounds contemporary, whereas if you were to play, you know, a record from 40 years earlier alongside one of the Beatles records or one of Dylan's records, it would have sounded, you know, like an antique.
Yes, I agree, yes.
And nothing has really happened in music to fundamentally change music again since that era of 1963-64.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't really keep up with popular music, but you might be right. I mean, I don't listen to to rap and hip hop and the various genres of modern music. So for all I know, that you know, the world could change. But unfortunately, I think with popular music, for some reason, one's attention and interest gets stuck in a kind of period where one was young, basically. And
The
stuff you heard growing up is what you like for the rest of your life. It's not so with other music. I mean, I find as I get older, I get much more interested in classical music. And indeed, I go to symphony concerts and so forth, and I discover new things I didn't know from centuries ago, and I'm excited by it. But for some reason, the pop music of today doesn't excite me at all. And there's something about pop music that is obviously to do with being young. And when that moment goes, you know, I don't know many. I'm middle-aged now. I'm in my mid-40s. I don't know many middle-aged people who listen to, you know, what's on MTV, or would even ever tune into MTV. So there's something perhaps less, intrinsically less serious and demanding about pop music, it's something to do with being young.
Tell me, what are you working on now?
Well, I'm working on some books, and I always unfortunately think it's bad luck to talk about a book before you publish it, because if you talk about it, you don't tend to do it. So you'll forgive me if I don't tell you what it is, but I'm always working, and there's always another book. But I hope, you know, people find Fab entertaining. I think sometimes I give the impression that it's all anti-Paul, and it's certainly not that. But I think sometimes people pick up on the criticisms, which there are in the book. But basically, it's a study of an interesting and rich life. And that's why I wrote the book, because the man has led an extraordinarily interesting life. And that's why I hope it's a good book, because the subject matter is interesting.
Well, I will second that. I'm going to tell everybody that it is a good book and that they should read it right away. It's called Fab, An Intimate Life of Paul McCartney. Howard Soons is the author and my guest tonight. Thank you so much for staying up late there in England and talking to us here in California.
Well, it's a pleasure.
Well, that's it for this week's edition of From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the program and you'll come back and see us again next time. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at KUSP.org or download our podcasts on iTunes or check us out on Facebook. I want to thank Howard Soans for being my guest this week. His book is called Fab, An Intimate Life of Paul McCartney. He's also the author of Down the Highway, The Life of Bob Dylan. The production of From the Bookshelf is aided and abetted by Francis Venegas. Thanks, Francis. For From the Bookshelf, I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.